That irrespective where we would be in our agenda, that immediately after lunchtime on this Wednesday, we should move on to agenda item 13, the relationships between the Codex Alimentarius Commission and other international organizations. Representatives of these organizations are here, however, having a very tight travel schedule, and for that reason, we will not only give the floor to the Director General of OIE, but also to a few other representatives of international organizations. We will try to keep the discussion as concise as possible, and once we have done that, then we return back to where we were at agenda item 11. We have had a discussion here at the head table and has agreed that first of all, has been said by the delegation of Brazil that we will not automatically refer the matter to the CCGP, but that we will have a discussion. We have had a list of countries, and we will allow them briefly to express their views. So we will, after 13, come back to the intervention made before lunch by the delegation of Brazil and have a discussion. This being said, ladies and gentlemen, it is my pleasure to welcome, as I said already this morning, more or less, the Director General, Dr. Valla. Let me see where he's sitting. Over there, yes, thank you. And, Monsieur Valla, the floor is yours.
Merci, Monsieur le Président. Je vais essayer d'être bref. Je voudrais d'abord remercier la FAO, et l'OMS et le secrétariat du Codex de m'avoir fait l'honneur de m'inviter, de me donner la possibilité de m'exprimer brièvement devant vous au nom de l'Organisation mondiale de la santé animale et de l'ensemble de nos membres. Je voudrais au nom de l'OIE et en mon nom personnel féliciter le président, le docteur Mocha, et les vice-présidents, docteur Karine Ulbach, madame Moraini Ottman, docteur Vanek, vous-même, pour l'excellent travail accompli jusqu'ici, et féliciter la nouvelle présidente, docteur Karine Ulbach, pour sa brillante élection. J'aimerais vous signaler l'existence d'un document récapitulatif préparé par l'OIE, pour illustrer tous les résultats très positifs qui découlent de la coopération entre le Codex et l'OIE. Il vous a été distribué sous le libellé CAC-31-INF-4. Je propose aujourd'hui aux délégués de bien vouloir particulièrement se concentrer sur deux points que je vais exposer. Le premier point concerne les progrès accomplis dans la coopération en cours entre l'OIE et le Codex, et mon deuxième point concernera brièvement les implications des normes dites privées dans le travail de l'élaboration des normes officielles de l'OIE et du Codex qui sont couvertes par l'accord SPS de l'OMC. Concernant les progrès accomplis dans notre coopération, et en s'accordant sans réserve sur l'importance de la maîtrise coordonnée des risques sanitaires tout au long du continuum de la chaîne alimentaire, allant de l'étable à la table, la Commission du Codex et l'OIE s'efforcent, depuis 2001, de mettre en place ensemble une collaboration solide et continue pour concevoir des normes internationales harmonisées et complémentaires couvrant toute la chaîne alimentaire. Et dans cet esprit, je me suis assuré que l'OIE puisse apporter son appui au Codex en 2008-2009 dans les domaines suivants. Premièrement, aux travaux du CCFIX, Comité sur les systèmes d'inspection et de certification, notamment ceux relatifs au projet de document sur l'élaboration d'un modèle générique de certificat sanitaire en tant qu'annexe aux directives pour la conception, l'établissement, la délivrance et l'utilisation des certificats officiels génériques. Comme le Codex, notre but est d'améliorer la fiabilité des certificats sanitaires sans ajouter des complications administratives aux services officiels qui en sont chargés. Deuxièmement, aux travaux du CCFH sur l'hygiène alimentaire pour préparer l'état d'avancement de nos travaux sur les salmonelles en élevage. Et nous continuerons à travailler dur pour fournir des normes qui seront adoptées l'année prochaine afin de réduire les salmonelles à la ferme dans les élevages. Troisièmement, nous avons participé, comme d'habitude, aux travaux du comité du Codex sur les principes généraux. Et quatrièmement, nous nous sommes investis dans les travaux du groupe spécial intergouvernemental du Codex sur les aliments dérivés des biotechnologies. L'OIE va procéder à l'évaluation des implications de l'utilisation des vaccins à ADN recombinant dans la sécurité sanitaire des aliments d'origine animale, du fait d'une résolution adoptée en 2007 par nos pays membres. Conformément à nos procédures, l'OIE doit procéder par le biais de groupes d'experts ad hoc. L'OIE est ouvert à la participation d'experts supplémentaires nommés par la FAO et ou l'OMS dans le groupe ad hoc chargé de cette question. Conformément à son programme de travail concernant la sécurité sanitaire des produits alimentaires d'origine animale pendant leur phase de production, le rapport du groupe ad hoc sera soumis au groupe de travail de l'OIE sur la sécurité sanitaire des produits, qui bénéficie de la participation de fonctionnaires de haut niveau de la FAO, de l'OMS et du secrétariat du Codex. Et les résultats sont transmis pour considération à la commission élue du Code sanitaire pour les animaux terrestres et, en fin de compte, notre Assemblée générale des délégués, des membres, pour décision finale. Je voudrais faire brièvement quelques commentaires sur le suivi de la proposition que j'ai faite l'année passée concernant la possibilité d'établir une base légale pour le développement de normes conjointes au IE Codex. De mon point de vue, ce problème important des implications de l'utilisation de vaccins à ADN recombinant chez le bétail et les produits d'origine animale est un bon candidat pour l'établissement de normes conjointes au IE Codex sur ce sujet dès que possible. Cette question nécessitera, pour avancer, la signature d'un avenant à l'accord officiel existant entre l'OMS et l'OIE. Et cette modification a déjà été approuvée par l'Assemblée générale des délégués nationaux auprès de l'OIE en mai 2008. Par ailleurs, j'ai invité des représentants du secrétariat du Codex et des experts participant régulièrement à certains comités du Codex à participer aux réunions de l'OIE listées ci-après. Premièrement, le groupe de travail sur la sécurité sanitaire des aliments d'origine animale en phase de production. Deuxièmement, le groupe ad hoc sur l'identification et la traçabilité des animaux vivants. Troisièmement, le groupe ad hoc chargé de la révision des modèles de certificat de l'OIE. Le groupe ad hoc sur l'antibiorésistance. Le groupe ad hoc sur la biotechnologie. Le groupe ad hoc sur les bonnes pratiques d'élevage. Et le groupe ad hoc sur la salmonellose. Vous voyez ainsi que notre coopération est devenue intensive. Les échanges d'informations scientifiques et techniques, pensements croisés déjà existants entre les normes internationales de nos deux organisations, démontrent la grande utilité de la synergie mise en place entre l'OIE et le Codex pour ce dossier qui concerne la prévention, la détection et le contrôle des salmonelles dans les élevages. Je voudrais m'attarder un peu sur l'alimentation animale, qui est un domaine de coopération important. L'OIE est en train de préparer des lignes directrices pour la maîtrise des dangers sanitaires et zoosanitaires liés à l'alimentation animale, à la fois pour l'alimentation des animaux terrestres et pour celle des animaux aquatiques. Il en résulte que les travaux menés par l'OIE dans le domaine de la sécurité sanitaire des aliments se concentrent tous sur le segment de la chaîne alimentaire situé au niveau de la production primaire, à savoir au niveau de la ferme, afin de compléter les travaux déjà menés par le Codex sur le segment de la chaîne situé en aval de la production primaire. Si le Codex décidait de créer une task force dans le domaine de l'alimentation animale, je propose qu'elle soit commune avec l'OIE. Dans le cas contraire, si cette task force n'était pas créée, je propose d'inviter les experts que vous désigneriez à œuvrer dans les groupes existants de l'OIE qui préparent les normes dans le domaine de l'alimentation animale. L'année passée, lors de sa 30e session, la commission du Codex a recommandé officiellement que la FAO et l'OMS étudient la possibilité de procéder à une révision ou à une actualisation des accords précédemment signés à l'OIE selon les besoins. Elle a également demandé au secrétariat du Codex d'identifier, avec le concours du bureau juridique de la FAO et de celui de l'OMS, tout problème d'ordre pratique affectant la coopération entre la FAO et l'OIE qui pourrait être nécessaire d'aborder. En examinant le texte de l'accord signé par l'OIE et la FAO en vigueur, il a été noté que ce texte prévoit des dispositions particulières relatives à l'élaboration conjointe de normes internationales qui portent sur les aspects de la production animale ayant un impact sur la sécurité sanitaire des denrées alimentaires en collaboration avec d'autres instances internationales concernées. Par contre, le texte de l'accord signé par l'OIE et l'OMS ne contient pour le moment aucune disposition de nature similaire. Par voie de conséquence, j'ai proposé à l'OMS d'ajouter un nouvel article au texte de l'accord existant pour que l'OIE et la commission du Codex puissent mettre au point conjointement des normes relatives aux sujets considérés selon les mandats de l'OIE et du Codex. Le 30 mai 2008, la session générale des délégués nationaux de l'OIE a approuvé la modification proposée. L'OMS a confirmé, par l'aide de son directeur général du 9 avril, qu'elle prendrait en considération, alors ce mot est important pour les juristes, qu'elle prendrait en considération le projet d'amendement au texte de l'accord actuel pour prévoir une collaboration plus étroite entre l'OIE et la commission du Codex en matière de sécurité sanitaire des denrées alimentaires. Après la mise à jour des termes de l'accord avec l'OMS, l'OIE recontactera la commission du Codex pour renforcer davantage nos cadres réglementaires afin de permettre l'élaboration conjointe de normes dans les domaines d'intérêt commun. Monsieur le Président, Mesdames, Messieurs, mon deuxième point concerne les normes publiques et privées. Les normes établies unilatéralement par les organismes privés, par exemple les chaînes de supermarchés et les organismes les représentant, peuvent dans certains cas être en contradiction avec les normes basées sur la science et démocratiquement adoptées par les organisations multilatérales intergouvernementales sur la base de l'accord SPS et engendrer des difficultés supplémentaires, notamment pour les pays en développement. En 2005, le problème des normes privées pour les bananes a été soulevé officiellement pour la première fois au comité SPS par un pays des Caraïbes qui s'est plaint que les normes privées sont parfois plus rigides que les normes internationales et ont un impact particulier sur les petits agriculteurs. Depuis 2005, le problème des normes privées a été régulièrement soulevé dans les réunions du comité SPS. Cette année, au mois de mai, la session générale, l'Assemblée générale de l'OIE a adopté une résolution incluse dans le document que nous avons soumis au Codex pour me demander, entre autres, de travailler avec les organisations publiques et privées dans l'objectif de prendre en considération les inquiétudes de très nombreux pays membres qui pensent que quand les normes privées sont utilisées, elles doivent l'être en conformité avec celles de l'OIE. Je considère que les normes privées sont un sujet d'intérêt commun pour l'OIE et le Codex, que ce sujet pourrait faire l'objet de réflexions communes de nos deux organisations à l'avenir. Enfin, Monsieur le Président, l'année passée, j'ai annoncé que la première conférence internationale de l'OIE sur l'identification et la traçabilité des animaux et des produits d'origine animale autour de la thématique de l'étable à la table, organisée à Buenos Aires en Argentine les 17, 18 et 2000 et 2000 et 17, 18, 19 mars 2000 aura lieu en Argentine à Buenos Aires, et cette conférence va susciter un intérêt mondial pour les normes internationales en la matière, publiée à la fois par l'OIE et par le Codex. Je voudrais par conséquent terminer mon intervention en incitant tous les délégués du Codex à participer à cette conférence. Je vous remercie pour votre attention et vous souhaite une fructueuse 31e session.
Thank you, Dr. Fallah, for your very interesting introductory remarks, giving us an update where we are in the cooperation between OIE and Codex, which indeed is improving year after year. You have clearly identified those areas where we have work to do together. We took note of particularly the legal implications. You correctly pointed out what happened since our last year's meeting, and working on a memorandum of understanding between the OIE and particularly the WSO, if I am correctly informed. And you said, yes, your governing body is in agreement, and it is my understanding that the legal counsel of the WSO is considering its implications. Second item, indeed, is also an issue that, which is close to our hearts, the private standards. And we certainly will have that issue also later on our agenda. And finally, we took note on your kind invitation to join you in an international meeting in Buenos Aires, March next year. Ladies and gentlemen, I guess you all have listened carefully to the interesting remarks of Dr. Fallah of OIE. And I will allow to have a few questions for clarification. However, I would propose that we do not touch upon the issue of private standards. I guess this is very close to your heart, but as I said, we have that elsewhere on our agenda, so don't touch upon that one. But maybe you have questions or observations regarding the first part of the introduction made by Dr. Fallah of OIE. Is there anybody from the floor who wish to raise a few issues, questions, observations? Colombia, do you want the floor, or is it your flag from before lunchtime?
Colombia, Zimbabwe.
Colombia, please.
Gracias, señor presidente. Simplemente quiero que el señor presidente me aclare cuántas organizaciones internacionales van a intervenir en este punto, porque de acuerdo al programa y de acuerdo a los estatutos, cualquier modificación al programa sí está considerada. Entonces, dentro de la mayor consideración por las organizaciones internacionales, yo quisiera saber si se modifica totalmente el programa con la inclusión total del punto 13 en este momento de la agenda, señor presidente. Gracias.
Thank you, delegation of Colombia. There was another flag identified.
Zimbabwe. I can immediately insert
it. Zimbabwe, and then I can immediately.
We will answer the question of Colombia. Mr. Secretary, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. By this point of time, we have recognized the presence and also the wish of making a statement by the following organizations under this item. Following the OIE, statements will be made by WTO, IAEA, and OIML, and finally OIB, meaning four more organizations, and all the representatives have been informed of the time constraint, so we can anticipate that their interventions will be short and well focused. and afterwards, when we move to item 13B, there will be only one intervention from ISO. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And can I make a very urgent housekeeping announcement at this point?
Please go ahead, Mr. Secretary.
We have made available a list, draft list of participants of this meeting in the documentation desk so that delegates can verify your names, address, contact, etc., and so that we can correct errors. Some of you, or I don't know, maybe none of you, but somebody else, has taken this master copy with corrections from the document desk. So we have lost a very valuable document.
What is it?
And we call upon you to check whether some of you or somebody who, whom you know has not taken by mistake this master copy of the list of delegates. And we will make available backup copy of the list of delegations available at the documentation desk. So in the meantime, delegations can consult the accuracy of your names and affiliates, etc. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Secretary. I give the floor to Zimbabwe and then afterwards to the delegation of New Zealand. Zimbabwe, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My contribution is on the issue of the responsibilities of OIE and Codex. We at our National Codex meeting, there was concern raised on whether there is a clarity of responsibilities between Codex and OIE on the issue of animal feeds. And I've heard the Director General talking about inviting Codex to participate in the meetings of the OIE in terms of deliberating on animal feed standards. So I'm seeking clarification on whether there is a clarity of responsibilities in terms of animal feed standards between OIE and Codex. Thank you.
Thank you, Delegation of Zimbabwe. New Zealand, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's clear to Codex members that we're increasingly moving from generic texts to those providing specific guidance on priority food commodity hazard combinations to address priority public health issues. And if we look at the CCFH work program, there's clear evidence of this. In terms of the new draft code of practice that's being prepared for control measures for Campylobacter and Salmonella in broiler chickens, this code is based on primarily on the overarching principles in the meat hygiene code. And I just wanted to read very briefly the section that relates to a risk-based approach to meat hygiene. The code states that a risk-based approach requires that hygiene measures should be applied at those points in the food chain where they will be of greatest value in reducing foodborne risks to consumers. This should be reflected in application of specific measures based on science and risk assessment. It's quite clear that in terms of this code that is being developed, that the pre-harvest section is vital to applying a risk-based approach through to the consumer and choosing measures that are appropriate in the national situation. In this sense, there is a clear area to encourage more OIE input in developing the front end of this farm-to-plate code of practice. And we were wondering if it's possible for OIE, through its agency, to encourage the membership to actually provide more expertise in the working group scenario so that we can genuinely develop a risk-based code of practice. Thank you.
Thank you, Delegate of New Zealand. I see no.
Belize.
Delegation of Belize.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is my first time participating at the Commission meeting, and I'm very pleased with the progress that we've been doing. I'm also very pleased with the collaboration that I see from hearing from OIE. And I'm wondering, earlier we were extolled to communicate with the people in the health so that the delegates who go to the World Health Assembly bring forth some of the problems and issues that we have. And I'm wondering how much of that is being told to us to talk to the animal health people where it's not represented here as they go to OIE. I think the collaboration is very, very important because there's a lot of overlap in work, and if we can collaborate effectively, we can make sure that all these problems with monies and everything you have will be good. So I'm just urging the delegates to really collaborate in the area of food safety and animal health as well as in food safety. Thanks.
Thank you, Delegate of Belize, and welcome to the Codex family, and I'm very happy that you define what we're doing here as progress. Thank you. Okay, let me check with the Secretary, please. Mr. Secretary, please, there were a few questions raised. Will you be so kind to give an explanation?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. With regard to the OIE and the Codex, the areas for standard setting by Codex and by OIE are set out and defined in the basic documents of each of the two organizations. And as far as Codex is concerned, we set standards for the protection of consumers and for ensuring fair practices in the food trade. Therefore, any standard setting work that contribute to one of these objectives can be considered and implemented by the Commission. And of course, the OIE has its own constitution with its own strategic plan. So I presume that the OIE has its own area of work. Of course, as far as Codex is concerned, among those Codex standards we develop standards speaking to the food safety and other guidelines and related text are considered as international reference point by the WTO. Therefore, there's a difference between the whole range of Codex standards that the Commission is entitled to develop and revise and update, and those standards that are considered as SPS relevant. I presume that the same principles apply to the OIE standards. OIE will and have and will continue to develop its standards in its areas of competence. And when it comes to the standards regarding zoonosis and the protection of animal health, those OIE standards are considered as relevant international benchmark within the framework of the WTO's SPS agreement. Well, this being said, Mr. Chairman, there are specific areas where the standards set contribute to further both objectives of ensuring animal health and promoting food safety for humans. This is the reason why the Commission took several years ago a decision to identify the OIE as an important agency to collaborate with, and we have adopted a few action plans consisting of the information exchange and cross-reference between the Codex and OIE standards where appropriate, and participation of the standard setting process of the other organization. And we have continued our efforts along these lines to ensure that the OIE standards and the codex standards that are set in specific areas, such as animal feeding, are not contradictory and instead create synergy. So, Mr. Chairman, this is a brief reply to the question raised by Zimbabwe. And in relation to the question raised by New Zealand, I think the very important points have been made, and I think these points need merit to be fully considered within the Codex Committee on Food Hygiene. Thank you.
Thank you for that clarification. I see the flag of the OIE. OIE, please.
Merci, Monsieur le Président. Jusqu'en 2001, il n'existait pas de mécanisme de concertation entre l'OIE et le Codex. Le risque était grand de faire adopter des normes par nos assemblées générales qui pouvaient être contradictoires. Et nous incitons bien sûr tous les pays membres, parce que nous avons les mêmes pays membres, nous les incitons à se coordonner avant les réunions du Codex et de l'OIE pour avoir des positions similaires. Ce n'est pas encore toujours le cas, et nous souhaiterions que nos pays membres aient les mêmes positions sur des sujets d'intérêt commun que nous avons entre l'OIE et le Codex. À ce titre, nous avons publié dans le document que nous avons envoyé la liste de tous les délégués nationaux nommés par leur gouvernement et qui représentent à la salle de l'OIE. Vous avez cette liste dans le document qui vous a été remis. Concernant la question qui a été posée sur la responsabilité de l'OIE dans le domaine notamment de l'alimentation animale, le mandat de l'OIE tel qu'il est, l'OIE a son propre mandat donné par ses pays membres, mais l'OIE a aussi des responsabilités dans le cadre de l'accord SPS de l'Organisation mondiale du commerce, qui indique que l'OIE est responsable pour les maladies animales, y compris les zoonoses. À ce titre, l'alimentation animale constitue un risque de propagation de maladies et de zoonoses que nous souhaitons aborder en proposant des normes à nos pays membres. Et c'est dans ce but que nous donnons la priorité dans les normes relatives à l'alimentation animale, à la prévention de la dissémination de pathogènes animaux qui peuvent être aussi zoonotiques. Et c'est dans cet esprit que nous proposons au Codex une collaboration et des normes éventuellement conjointes, si c'était possible, puisque le Codex a également un intérêt pour les risques constitués par l'alimentation animale, notamment vis-à-vis des contaminants. Et nous avons là un sujet qui nous paraît tout à fait approprié pour une collaboration renforcée. Concernant les salmonelloses, cela relève de la même logique. Le mandat de l'OIE est de donner à nos États membres des outils normatifs pour réduire la pression des salmonelles à la ferme, notamment des salmonelles les plus dangereuses comme Salmonella enteritidis ou Typhimurium. C'est pourquoi nous sommes en train de travailler pour proposer à nos États membres des outils normatifs utiles pour la surveillance, la prévention et le commerce extérieur et les exportations dans ce domaine relatif aux salmonelles. Et nous pensons que les normes que nous allons adopter vont être très utiles au Codex pour être incorporées dans le guide qu'il est en train de préparer et qui va jusqu'au produit final et à sa sécurité vis-à-vis du risque des salmonelles. Je vous remercie, Monsieur le Président.
Thank you, Monsieur Vella. The last speaker is Chile, and then I conclude the discussions on this item. Chile, please.
Gracias, señor presidente. Solamente recordar que en nuestro plan estratégico 2008-2013, que hace poco vimos, en el punto 4.4, entre los indicadores tenemos la determinación de medios por los que el Codex pueda reforzar su cooperación con la OIE y la CIPF. Por tanto, dentro de nuestro plan estratégico se encuentra una labor conjunta con la OIE en que se debería fortalecer esa acción. Tenemos que ver cómo que se conjuga eso con el examen crítico de cada proceso normativo que nosotros tengamos. ¿Cómo entra esa relación normativa dentro del proceso del examen crítico que haga el Comité Ejecutivo para cuando comienza el proceso de cada norma? Nosotros estamos a favor de poder trabajar en conjunto con la OIE. Son dos organizaciones hermanas y referentes del Acuerdo Sanitario y Fitosanitario de la OMC en distintos ámbitos, por supuesto, como ya se clarificó. Gracias, señor Presidente.
Thank you, Delegation of Chile, to bring this to our attention. Ladies and gentlemen, and as a conclusion, first of all, I would like to thank the Director General of RAE for being here and introducing this area of work of common interest to the Commission. We should recognize that the cooperation between the two organizations has improved considerably over the last several years, and that indeed the Commission, the Codex, should seek and use every possibility to first strengthen the cooperation with OIE on those areas of work within the remits of both organizations. Particularly also, let's say, regarding to the legal implications of further formalizations of this relationship, we have been informed by the Director General on the current status, and that the legal services of the FEO and WSO are considering the matter. At this point in time, it is too early to ask them what their view will be, but I take it that in due time we will be informed by the parent organizations and particularly by the legal councils on this possibility to create a legal framework for further cooperation. We should not anticipate and speculate on that outcome, but when there will be a legal possibility for joint committees or activities, then we also should look into the practical implications, and that particularly, I guess, is covered under item 4.4 in our strategic plan, where particularly the responsible parties are the legal councils of FEO and WSO. Further, the Commission took note of the information and the position of OIE in the area of private standards. And finally, Mr. Chairman, ladies and gentlemen, I guess that what has been raised by New Zealand should be referred and brought to the attention of the Food Hygiene Committee. I guess that hopefully is a fair summary of what we discussed and heard. And once again, I would like to thank the colleagues from OIE. Then, and we give always OIE a here somewhat more privileged position because it is one of our sisters in the SPS arena. Then, ladies and gentlemen, as our secretary pointed out, we have representatives of four other international intergovernmental organizations. I will give them the floor one after the other. I would like to ask them, urge them to give a very short and brief presentation. I will not open the floor for questions. And then finally, we have the representative of ISO. It is my pleasure to give the floor to the representative of the World Trade Organization.
Thank you, Chair. The WTO has already submitted an information document to the Commission, and that can be found in 5. So I will just touch upon a few points that are already mentioned in that document and also provide a few updates from our last meeting, which took place last week. This committee continues to hold 3 meetings per year, and as I mentioned, the second meeting of this year was just held last week, and the one before was in April. And just for those delegations who might be interested, the upcoming meeting is scheduled for 8-9 October. And in June 2007, Rien Heige of the Netherlands replaced Juan Antonio Dorantes of Mexico as the chairperson, and he was just re-elected last week for another year. The committee continues to devote a large portion of each regular meeting to the consideration of specific trade concerns. 35 specific trade concerns were brought to the attention of the SPS committee during 2007. And of these, 8 related to food safety issues, 6 to plant health issues, and 19 to animal health and zoonosis issues. But of course, this last category includes issues such as TSEs that are also relevant from the perspective of food safety. Some basic information on these specific trade concerns is provided in the WTO submission, which I just referred to. But for further information, delegates may wish to consult the Secretariat's annual compilation of specific trade concerns contained in GSPS Gen 204 Revision 8 and its addenda. Another point I would like to highlight is that in October 2007, a new SPS information management system was launched. It is publicly available at the following address, spsims.wto.org. It contains information on SPS notifications, on SPS documents circulated, on specific trade concerns raised, and on the inquiry points and notification authorities of members. Through its advanced searching and reporting functions, it allows easier tracking and management of WTO's SPS-related documentation. The system has also made it much easier for the FAO's international portal to access WTO information. The system was presented to SPS committee delegates at various occasions, and we'll be happy to provide further information to interested delegates here. I would also like to inform the Commission that the Committee has adopted revised recommended procedures on implementing the transparency obligations of the SPS agreement. These revised recommendations include also modifications to various notification formats. And these will be applicable as of 1st of December due to some technical arrangements that the Secretariat has to complete with respect to these new notification formats. But one significant change in the revised recommendations is to encourage WTO members to notify new or changed measures which conform to international standards. As you may know, the obligation in the SPS agreement is for members to notify new or changed measures when the content of these are not substantially the same as the content of an international standard. So if a country is actually adopting an international standard, currently, there is no obligation to notify this adoption of this SPS measure based on a codex standard, for example. However, many members have been indicating that for transparency and for predictability, it would be very useful if all new or changed SPS measures were notified to the WTO, regardless of whether they conform to international standards or not. This new recommendation is also expected to assist the committee in undertaking its task of monitoring the use of international standards. The committee is mandated to review the implementation of the SPS agreement at least once every 4 years. The committee adopted its second report of its second review back in 2005, and one of the priority areas under the review has been the relationship of the SPS committee with the IPPC Codex and the OIE. The report to the Commission that I referred to earlier provides some further information on the discussions so far, which, among others, has underlined the importance of coordination at the national level between representatives to the WTO and the Three Sisters. And in the context of its discussions on the review, the committee decided to hold a workshop on the standard-setting procedures of Codex, OIE, and the IPPC. This will be held in October 2009, and there will be some funding to bring representatives from developing countries. Lastly, the last section of the report provides some information on the STDF. Due to time constraints, I will not provide too many details on that. Just to say that STDF is a global program in capacity building and technical cooperation established by the FAO, OIE, World Bank, WHO, and the WTO. And it assists developing countries to comply with food safety, animal and plant health measures in international trade. And it's both a coordination mechanism and a funding mechanism. And Currently, SDDF has a portfolio of about 27 projects and 28 project preparation grants, and I just would like to inform the Commission, in case there is an interest from a delegation, that the next deadline for requests for project grants and project preparation grants is 26th of August. I also had intended to provide an update on the issue of private standards and the discussions in the SPS committee, but if the chair agrees, I'd like to take the floor once again when we get to that specific agenda item. Thank you.
Thank you, Mrs. Iral from the World Trade Organization. Yes, regarding to the latter point, when we come back to that issue on the private standards, we certainly will give you the floor to give us an update on the discussion in the SPS committee. Thank you very much for informing us on relevant information of interest to our Commission currently going on within the World Trade Organization. Then I move on to the representative of the IAEA, David Byron. Mr. Byron, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you once again for the opportunity to present these remarks. You have before you an information paper, CAC 31 INF 6, which goes over the details of many of the items I'll be covering. I'm basically going to cover the food safety activities of the joint FAO-IAEA program on nuclear techniques in food and agriculture. As is the Commission, this is a joint FAO-IAEA body that handles food safety issues related to agriculture and specifically nuclear-related technologies. Next slide, please. I can't even see this slide, but next slide, please. Give him a minute to dim the lights. I'd like to go into three major areas of our work. Again, this all has to do with improving food and environmental safety. We do this in close collaboration with FAO. The first area is responding to multiple food contamination hazards affecting food safety and trade. This mainly deals with methods of analysis and sampling in that we develop, adapt, and validate analytical methodologies for detecting, monitoring, and controlling food contaminants and food hazards throughout the food chain. We're starting in new areas of work and emphasizing new areas of work in the application of multi-residue and multi-target analytical techniques, as well as the traceability of contaminated foodstuffs through the use of isotope ratio measurements. We do this, of course, in the area of mycotoxins, in the area of pesticides, and in the area of veterinary drug residues. Next slide, Roberto. The second major area is responding to nuclear emergencies affecting food and agriculture. Once again, this is a collaborative effort with FAO, in that we have emergency preparedness and response procedures to help our member states deal with these events. This includes a forthcoming emergency exercise that's going to be held in Mexico on the 9th and 10th of July next week. We also apply agricultural countermeasures to mitigate the immediate and longer-term effects from these contaminations. And we also revise interagency standards with the FAO and other UN bodies concerning emergency preparedness and response. Roberto. Last but not least, Mr. Chairman, we work in the area of ionizing radiation. I can say, however, that we are getting away of, but haven't entirely stopped work on sanitary aspects of irradiation. We're dealing more now in phytosanitary aspects of irradiation, especially dealing with quarantine purposes. As many of you are aware, irradiation has been approved for many countries for quarantine to control insect infestations on fresh fruit. We also are going through research programs to develop generic treatment levels for groups of insect pests negatively affecting international trade. And last but not least, what this does, it helps to maintain product quality and safety while at the same time decreasing the use of traditional fumigants and pesticides. One of those is methyl bromide, which, as many of you know, has been banned from use in international trade. Next slide. These activities on this slide are all contained in the information paper. They go in quite a bit of detail. We're doing a lot of research now on seafood safety risk analysis. We're dealing with the Codex Committee and contaminants in food in that regard. We deal with pesticide residues, including holding one of my staff holds chairmanship of the working group on methods of analysis and sampling. They're dealing with measurement uncertainty, separation of milk fat from whole milk for analytical purposes. We also want to contribute data to a CCFC discussion paper on fumonisins in corn. We have extensive data from West Africa. This is an electronic working group that's being led by Brazil. And last but not least, Mr. Chairman, although the nomination deadline has passed for this workshop that's mentioned, this first workshop that's mentioned in October and November 2008, this year, we will have another workshop in October 2009 on analytical methodologies for veterinary drug residues. Looking ahead, Mr. Chairman, we want to intensify our activities for the development and application of research, which is one of our strongest areas. We have a Cybersdorf laboratory that conducts research for the subprogram that leads to technical assistance, technology transfer, and the elaboration of standards. This includes the IAEA technical cooperation projects, where we have over 200 projects within the division related to agriculture. We also have to increase our collaboration with member states in the implementation of food safety policy and regulatory programs. This, again, is towards the establishment of national and regional food control laboratories. And last but not least, something that's been pointed out by the IAEA Director General at the last Board of Governors, we're trying to strengthen our efforts towards emergency preparedness and response so that we can help our member states respond to these unfortunate circumstances. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman, for the opportunity to comment. There is a website link in our document, and there's plenty more information available there as well as in the paper. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Byron, to provide us with an update on the joint program in IAA. Thank you very much for that. Then I move on to the next organization, OIML. Present here in the room, yes, I see your flag, sir. The floor is yours.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for giving me the opportunity to address this commission. For many years, the OIML and Codex have had observer status into each other's organizations, but as far as I'm aware, this has never led to any concrete involvement in each other's technical activities. However, recently the OIML embarked on a project to set up a certification system for the quantity of product in prepackages, and this is where we have identified some overlap between Codex standards and OIML recommendations. And this is the reason why I would like to introduce the OIML to you, and this is also why we are seeking a closer cooperation between OIML and Codex. You're probably aware that metrology is the science of measurement and its practical application, and that legal metrology is the metrology as far as it is regulated in legislation. And this can cover a wide area, but for instance, measurement standards, the legal units of measurement, specifications for measuring instruments that are under legal control, and as I mentioned, the quantity of product in prepackages. Next slide, please. The organization, OML, was established in 1955 under the OML Convention, and the Bureau, the BIML, is the executive office and is based in Paris. Currently, we have 59 signatories to the convention, so there are 59 members, and we also have 57 corresponding members. The purpose, in short, of the OML is given in the convention. It is about mutual information about subjects of legal harmonization of regulations, the mutual confidence and acceptance, and we're trying to give support to developing countries, but unfortunately we don't have funds for that. So our support is mainly information. We have defined what we call a world metrology system, and there you will find some organizations on the global level that are involved in this. We have, of course, the BIPM, which is the responsible for the scientific metrology in this world. OML represents legislation, the legislative part of metrology, and we also have connections with ILAC and IAF for accreditation and conformity assessment. Together, we have a mutual a memoranda of understanding and also bilateral memoranda of understanding, and we seek close cooperation. We also take into account as much as possible the international standards, obviously, from ISO and IEC. This is a short, a very brief organization chart. The main authority is the conference, and each member state has appointed one representative to the committee of the OML, which is the CIML, and they govern the day-to-day work in the organization. The president of the CIML is also the chairman of the conference. The technical work is done in technical committees and subcommittees, much like the structure that you will find in ISO and IEC. The Presidential Council is an advisory body to the president, and also in the corresponding members and the liaison organizations, and indicated that they have observer status but are invited to participate whenever they can in the work of the technical committees and subcommittees, and they are also welcome to join the meetings of the conference and the CIML. OML produces publications. The most important ones are the international recommendations, which are international standards according to the WTO-TBT agreement, and in fact they are model regulations. OML member states have taken upon them the obligation to implement these recommendations as far as possible into their national legislation. We also produce international documents, which are mainly guidance documents on issues of legal metrology, vocabularies, and we have a periodical, the OML Bulletin. All these publications can be downloaded free of charge from our website. Next slide, please. We operate some certification system. One is very general for all types of measuring instruments and is based on the exchange of test results. We have a mutual acceptance arrangement for certain categories of measuring instruments, and this is increasing. And we are considering, as I mentioned, a certificate system for prepackages and also for bulk measurements or measurement of bulk goods. Next slide, please. Yes. Looking at the scope of both the Codex and OML, we see that there is an overlap as it concerns the protection of consumers and also fair practices in trade. Next slide, please. The overlap that we are currently have identified is on the quantity of product in prepackages, some labeling issues, and also there may be instruments that are used for certain measurements, which are covered by both our standards. Next slide, please. We anticipate strengthening the cooperation by means of exchange of information, the identification of overlapping activities, avoidance, obviously, of duplication of work, trying to resolve any conflicting provisions in our standards, and participating in each other's technical work. And if you require more information, an information document has been circulated in 12, and you can also find information on our website. All our documents are there. And if you have specific questions, feel free to address me. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Cole, for introducing your organization to the Codex Alimentarius Commission. Indeed, as you said, I doubt whether your organization is well known to many of the participants here. And we also notice your desire to seek in closer cooperation between OIML and Codex. So once again, thank you for your presentation. The last speaker under the list of international intergovernmental organizations is Monsieur Roof of the International Wine Organization, OIV. Mr. Roof, please.
Monsieur le Président, merci. Mesdames et Messieurs les délégués, je voudrais brièvement, au nom du directeur général, rappeler que l'Organisation internationale de la vigne et du vin, en qualité d'organisation intergouvernementale, regroupe aujourd'hui environ 44 États membres, next slide please, qui représentent aujourd'hui environ 90% de la production et 90% de la consommation de vin et près de 70% de la production de raisins au niveau mondial. Next slide. Comme l'avait précisé le directeur général l'année dernière lors de la 30e session de la Commission à Rome, les missions de l'OIV s'articulent selon trois axes. Le premier axe concerne la prise en compte des préoccupations des producteurs, mais aussi des consommateurs, et en particulier dans le domaine de la sécurité alimentaire. Le deuxième axe concerne la collaboration avec les organisations internationales et notamment les organisations intergouvernementales, celles qui poursuivent des activités normatrices. Et enfin, le troisième axe, c'est de contribuer à l'harmonisation internationale des pratiques et des normes internationales, et notamment en élaborant de nouvelles normes pour les produits vitivinicoles. Next slide, please. Dans ce cadre, je voudrais informer la Commission du Codex que lors de la dernière Assemblée générale des États membres de l'OIV, qui s'est tenue à Vérone en Italie la semaine dernière, les États membres de l'OIV ont adopté plusieurs résolutions. Il s'agit en particulier d'un guide de la viticulture durable, notamment sur les aspects environnementaux. Next slide, please. Et qui concerne plusieurs aspects divers, notamment sur les aspects donc environnementaux et sur la production. Next slide, please. Les autres recommandations ou résolutions adoptées lors de cette Assemblée générale concernent une norme sur les critères de maturité des raisins de table. Et je rappelle, avec une référence directe à la norme du Codex qui a été adoptée l'année dernière lors de la 30e session et auquel l'OIV avait participé à son élaboration, aux premières étapes de la procédure. D'autres recommandations concernent de nouvelles pratiques œnologiques pour l'élaboration des vins qui intègrent certains additifs qui pourront, Monsieur le Président, faire l'objet d'une étude ultérieure au sein des comités compétents et notamment au sein du comité Codex sur les additifs. Des amendements aux définitions des produits et notamment des alcools et des boissons spiritueuses d'origine vitivinicole ont été adoptés également. De nouvelles spécifications pour certains produits œnologiques ont été adoptées en précisant les critères de pureté de ces produits œnologiques. Enfin, une dernière partie de ces recommandations qui ont été adoptées concerne de nouvelles méthodes d'analyse pour le contrôle des vins. Monsieur le Président, toutes ces normes ou toutes ces recommandations sont consultables sur le site internet de l'OIV. Et pour conclure, Monsieur le Président, je voudrais souligner qu'à l'occasion de cette Assemblée générale de l'OIV, le secrétaire de la commission du Codex Alimentarius a fait une intervention remarquée en soulignant les nombreux points d'intérêt communs à nos deux organisations. Et enfin, je voudrais également réitérer la volonté de l'OIV de poursuivre et de développer notre collaboration avec le Codex Alimentarius et de nombreuses références faites dans le projet de plan stratégique de l'OIV 2009-2012 en est un bon exemple. Donc collaboration peut être à deux niveaux, par la prise en compte des normes du Codex dans l'élaboration des normes OIV, mais aussi par l'expertise que peut apporter l'OIV dans certains domaines qui sont ou qui seront étudiés dans les différents comités. Et je prendrai pour exemple l'adoption également du Code de bonne pratique pour la réduction de l'ocratoxine A dans les vins, qui a été adopté par la 30e session de la commission du Codex l'année dernière et pour lequel la norme OIV avait été en partie et très grandement reprise dans la norme Codex. Monsieur le Président, mes derniers mots s'adresseront donc à Madame Karen Ulbach, que je félicite au nom du directeur général de l'OIV pour son élection à la présidence du Codex Alimentarius. Merci, Monsieur le Président.
Thank you, Mr. Roof, from the International Wine Organization, for providing us with an update and also indicating areas of work where we can work together. Ladies and gentlemen, that was the list of speakers, the representatives of the international intergovernmental organizations. And then I would like to move over to the next item, 13B. We have one representative of, in this case, ISO, an international non-governmental organization. The representative, Mr. McKinley, the Deputy Secretary General of ISO, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for the opportunity to speak. And the information, detailed information on ISO and its work contributing to and related to the work of Codex is presented in document, information document 7. I'm waiting for now for a presentation that's a brief overview. But I will start on the, to not delay. Certainly, ISO has been, has a long history with Codex. And the work of ISO has certainly been highly complementary to the work of Codex. But being an organization, non-governmental, next slide, please. Next slide. Thank you. There is definitely an increased demand for voluntary, consensus-based, multi-stakeholder international standards that are compliant with according to the principles and criteria established under the TBT, for example, of WTO. ISO has been producing these to satisfy trade, health, safety, environmental needs. And you can see some of the challenges that international standards are addressing through voluntary mechanisms to support many challenges, from climate change through to pandemics, natural disasters, and innovation and convergence of new technologies. Next slide. ISO is a system. It's 57 national members, national standards bodies that represent countries that are 98% of the world's GDP, 97% of the world's population. ISO has fairly prolific in terms of number of standards as well, 17,000 standards in our catalog, producing every month 90 to 100 new or revised standards. It's important to note we established consensus at two levels, very similar to Codex, at the expert level within our working groups to establish consensus amongst the individuals who know best about the subject, and then validation through formal processes at the national standards body level. Again, with other pillars to the ISO system being the Central Secretariat here in Geneva and all of our technical bodies, more than, in fact, now over 700 active committees, including project committees. Next slide. ISO has a very active global networking, starting, of course, with WTO in our involvement at the TBT meetings this week, and SPS last week, the Committee on Trade and Environment as well. The UN family, I won't go through the list, but certainly in the UN family, ISO is providing solutions that complement intergovernmental organization objectives in the maritime sector, in the working with WTO tourism now to complement some of their objectives, with other IGOs such as OECD and the World Customs Organization, and in the medical devices field. We have to do this. We keep liaison with a number of international organizations that are in partnership at the technical level within our system, more than 700 of these organizations. And we work with other regions and economic actors. Next slide, please. So ISO's work in food, agriculture, nutrition, it amounts to over 1,000 standards, 700 of them or so, 720 being in the ISO Technical Committee 34. These are described in the information document in detail, so I won't go into them. But just to highlight the subjects that are of particular interest that should be to Codex, certainly the 22,000 series on food safety management systems, an area that has received and been implemented now very popularly in 93 countries, where there, we are making important linkages with what was mentioned earlier, private standards, especially retailers establishing their own global approaches to food safety. We're establishing linkages with them to ensure coherence and benchmarking. Detection of GMOs, test methods for this, traceability approaches for organizations, irradiation, as was mentioned by IAEA as well, standards published in these areas. And the classical way with TC34 and Codex, many test methods for in various food areas, seeds, fruits and vegetables, cereals and so forth. But just to note as well, and they're described in the information document, that there's other committees that Codex should be aware of, and please encourage you to read over the document related to oils, fertilizers, and a new committee on aquaculture that I announced at a Codex meeting, a couple last Codex meeting, in fact. ISO CASCO is the committee on conformity assessment in ISO that establishes a toolbox for use by organizations who are performing testing, inspection, certification, accreditation, provides descriptions. This is the international criteria for these types of activities, and one where, for example, there is an important linkage to be made with CCFICS and the work that, of course, that committee does of Codex. And just to indicate that there's new biofuel subcommittee looking at fuel quality specifications for biodiesel and bioethanol. Last slide, please. So ISO and Codex, as I said, long-standing, 38 years collaboration with ISO TC34. And it's essential that there is good coordination, certainly something that's happening very constructively is communication between the two secretariats of the organization. But and it's starting, and it's going quite well in a number of areas at the committee and the task force levels of Codex and with the technical committees and subcommittees of ISO. We would also further encourage, as has been indicated by other international organizations, the delegations having a good communication between the delegations to the CAC and the ISO members and their mirror committees to the food-related activities in ISO. ISO's focus certainly is on complementarity and looking not to duplicate the important activities of Codex. Thank you, Chair, for the time to speak on this.
Thank you, Mr. McKinley, representing ISO, for providing updates. And certainly we will continue to liaise between the two organizations through our respective secretariats. Ladies and gentlemen, I think this will bring us at the end of item 13. It is 10 to 4. Time has passed to nominate candidates for the Vice Presidency. Mr. Secretary, will you read out the names of those who have a desire to be nominated as Vice Chair?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I also presume that delegations also need to organize themselves on to decide whether they can spend the whole evening on social events or should leave at least one of the delegation members in this room to participate in secret ballot. Mr. Chairman, in total, we have received four names of candidates, which are as follows. Mr. Sanjay Dev from India. Dr. Ben Manindo, from Uganda. Dr. Yasin Kayat, from Jordan. Mr. Knud Östergaard, if I can pronounce correctly the name, not at all. But you should know who he is. Mr. Knud Östergaard, better, from Denmark. We have four candidates to fill three posts available. Therefore, secret ballot will be organized this evening, starting shortly before 5:30. When the time comes, we will provide some more explanation on how the voting will proceed. In the case that the head of delegation participates in other events over the time, another member of the delegation designated by the head of the delegation can take part in the voting on his or her behalf. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Secretary.